Okay, last 2 seconds.
But it's not been great. Okay, so you're leaving our group to go and start a new group. We didn't even know. It's like, whoa, come on. This is just really important that everybody's aware of that.
Let's look up there then, and I hope that provides some fruit for, or some seeds, as it were, for discussion around those different dynamics. Let's just hear one thing from each table. I'll do the same thing Adrian did. Start from there. You guys.
Yeah, I mean, we were just saying that we hoped that the first bullet point had been done within the eldership anyway, and that Simon was then sent out as that, yes, with positional power, but also with time to go and implement that and to do some of the on the ground work with people, and then to draw that back in, not recounting every single word said in conversation, but what it looked like on the ground, to be putting some of those things that have been done together. I mean, I think if that bullet point was done separate from the eldership, then hugely that needs to come back to the eldership.
So why is he not talked to with him through before? Is that what you said? Yeah, absolutely. He had, by the way, in real life. So that's the question, is how come they're only hearing about it now when it's a fully formed plan? Yeah. Thank you. You guys?
We thought very similar that you should come to the eldership and ask, will this work? And get buy-in from the whole eldership. The whole eldership needs to be united if you're going to change that. And so you need to understand from them whether that plan will work. And hopefully the eldership will know enough people to say, well, actually that person perhaps will fit with that in that group. And you can adjust them to the way. Yeah. And make sure everything's happened before you go implement it.
Thank you. So the eldership will also have a wider reach, perhaps, in terms of knowing individuals.
Yes.
And that's one of the benefits of having a wider group of people to ask. Yeah. Right. Thank you. You guys?
I think what we've done is answer a different question than
yep.
we've asked. So we've changed the word tell to ask. What should he ask the elders?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably a bit of a stumbling block. You assume that conversations are already taking place. And, you're saying, I've got these ideas, what do you think? Should we go with that kind of thing?
Thank you. But that's the key change. It's not, because with a PCC, if I can speak frankly, you might say, this is my plan. You can disagree with it, but I really want you to just say yes to it. That's cooperating. Collaborating is help me solve this problem. And that's an important shift. Thank you. What did you guys talk about?
I think it's also starting from a slightly different place than we have here in terms of talking to the elders first, which is really important. But moving people around home groups is fraught with so many challenges, and drawing on the wisdom of the wider eldership is really important. And particularly when you're looking for new leaders of home groups, that's got to be something that the elders agree so that we can actually really encourage a couple of those people, making sure you're nurturing those people before this point, that they've actually had some training or you thought they might be suitable in the future.
That's great, thank you. And of course it may well be that Simon has thought it all through, but it's getting the eldership on board and broadening that discussion. Yeah. You guys.
Well, look, we said similar things. I guess some of it's also on what basis was Simon recruited, if he's on staff, was this one of the jobs he was expecting to do? And I think there can be a frustration in this process, can't you? If you're hired, and one of the things in your job description is you're in charge of small groups, you've got a mandate, you've been appointed on that basis, and then all your ideas get unpicked, everything you try and do gets taken to pieces. There can be a real frustration. I think in amongst all of this dialogue, there is also a place for someone to take the lead. And who is that within this structure?
Yeah, thank you. So the kind of technical term I've framed for that is called negotiating the collaboration space. So one of the things you need to agree as an eldership with either staff or someone you set off to do something is the eldership going to pore over the detail of everything, or are they going to give some broad outlines and then you get on and do things? So it's about agreeing that. And the eldership may have said, we're happy with the broad outlines, you just go off and do some detail, particularly if we don't think it's going to cause an earthquake within the church, which they can do. Yeah. Anything to add from down here? No? Okay. Great, thank you. I hope that was just a little way in to think about those dynamics. I'm going to hand over to Adrian. It's worth saying, by the way, when it comes to any of these questions we're talking about, that you can have an ideal in your mind with plurality, but actually the reality is there are disparities in structure, in time, in power, in all those kinds of things, and a lot of how you structure leadership is about how you manage those disparities. Now, have you ever seen in the press that some clever professor somewhere has come up with an expression to define happiness or something, and there's a little equation of all these different functions, and it's a bit bizarre, but you think, oh, okay, someone's thought about that very carefully. Well, I've got an equation for you, here it is, about the ideal, or not the ideal structure, the structure of leadership that's right for you. And this is kind of observational, really, just thinking about how do different factors impact what shape our leadership takes in the church. I'm just going to talk you through each of these, and then we'll work on a little case study together. There are probably more than these, but I think these are the five key defining factors in terms of how church leadership functions, for it to be effective and for it to work effectively in the context where you are. So let me tell you what they are. You'll be able to guess some of them. It's pretty straightforward, really. SC, the first one, is the size of the church. So I think you need to be thinking about what kind of structure and size of leadership do you need in order to shepherd the flock that the Lord has given to you. And the size of the church is going to impact your leadership structure. Or perhaps it's not just structure, this is this is how your leadership functions. So it's not just the structure of your leadership, it's how it actually works in practice. That's always going to be affected by the size of the church. And let me give you an example. If your church is the size we are, we're about 120 adults and children, I guess. How you pray for the church together as leaders is going to be different from if you are 800. Okay? You know, you might not be 800, but there are churches of that sort of size. Or even 400. So we pray through our attendance list as elders. We do that once a month. We have a prayer meeting once a month where we just pray through our attendance list, where we talk about pastoral issues, and then we pray for specific people. We do, I think we do five men, five women, five kids. And we pray through the attendance list in that way. And over the course of just over half a year, pray through the whole church. Now, if the church was 400, you can't do your pastoral care like that, because there would be some people you didn't get prayed for 3 years. And so you've got to work a different way, right? And one of the challenges here is when you get changes in any of these different factors, you've got to adapt the way that leadership functions. You've got to make sure that the leadership structure and function, in some sense, is taking account of what's happening in the church. So SC is size of church. PC is the polity of the church. What's your belief about leadership and how it functions? So we've already seen there is a little bit of clear blue water between perhaps what you might think is an independent and what you might think is an Anglican. And then within those two categories, there will be other versions as well. You might be more inclined to be a Presbyterian, and you've got a different model again. So actually understanding your polity, that's how you're structured, how your church leadership and order works. Understanding the polity of the church is going to impact your leadership structures. That's even true within the bounds of, let's say, independence. So in my independence chart, remember when I said you could be on the left? Let me just see if I can find that quickly. So in this little chart here, you could be right on the left, where you're kind of pure congregational. You can be right on the right. These are not political positions, so I just have to be left and right of my chart, which is elder ruled. the agenda of an elders meeting is going to look different if you're on the left-hand side, right, than it is if you're on the right-hand side. And how many deacons you have, and what function you think deacons have. Do you appoint deacons, for example, to individual roles, that's what we do in our church, or do you have a diaconate of people who are just general appointed to a board and to serve as a group of servants in the church? Again, that's going to impact what your leadership structure looks like. So the size of the church, your polity, and being clear on what your polity is. You know, what decisions are the remit of the elders and which aren't? Which are the decisions we need to take to the church meeting? Which aren't? We've got a very interesting dynamic in our church in that we have a converted Anglican who's just become the pastor. And I don't think I'm revealing any confidences to say that actually one of the biggest challenges is working out how the eldership works and moving from one to the other. So being clear on our polity, our order, is really helpful to him to understand how the meetings function. NE is the number of elders. So the number of elders you have makes a difference to how your structure works. Now that's pretty obvious, isn't it, at some level. For example, if you have three elders in any size church, you're basically going to have to work corporately. You all have to know everything really that's going on. And you have a chance to talk about everything that's going on. You can have an elders meeting that won't last till 2 a.m. Because actually, if everybody wants their say, it doesn't take too long. You can even do it in a WhatsApp group if you wanted to. If you have 12 elders, that doesn't work. But if you have 12 elders and everybody wants a say in everything that's going on, imagine the meetings, plural, this week and next week and the week after, where everybody wants to have their say on home groups that are being reorganised. So the more elders you have, the more likely it is you have to just change your leadership structure model. You probably, as the number increases, you probably need to be thinking about moving more towards cabinet kind of leadership, where one of the elders has responsible for this area of church life, another elder has responsible for another area of church life. So although you're sharing responsibility, a bit like the, I think in theory how the cabinet's supposed to work, physical cabinet, who knows what happens behind closed doors, individuals do have some element of responsibility. If there are fewer, then actually you can just do everything together. AD asked me a question at the break about how much is your structure, how your leadership functions, determined by the number of elders, or do you appoint the number of elders to fit your... Have I got the right word? Yes. Do you start with A and work towards B? Do you say this is our approach and therefore we need this number of elders? Or do you say, this is the number of elders we've got, and therefore we take this approach? I think there's validity in both. And there are dangers in both as well. If you're completely driven by what you want the end point to be, the structure, you could end up appointing people as elders who are not suitable to be elders. But equally, if you're just driven by pragmatism of saying, well, how many people are there to serve, you probably don't ever raise up new leaders or take... godly risks with some people, and apparently John Piper says behind me it just is right. So it's a bit chicken and egg, that question. GE, what's GE? That's the gifting of elders, and especially the relative gifting of elders. We've already seen in the power dynamics that people are different and have different levels of experience. I think there are two different kinds of gifting in eldership. There is the general gifting, which you'd expect all leaders to have. So as I read 1 Timothy 3, I read able to teach. So I believe that a leader should be able to teach. But the reality is that even within that gifting that should be applicable to every elder in the church, there will be different levels of ability, different levels of experience. And so you do have these imbalances you've got to work through. And then I think you've got some very specific gifts that people might have because of their background. So, for example, if you have someone on the eldership who's comes from a financial background in business, they might bring with them a certain set of very specific skills. They're not a requirement for them to be an elder, but actually they understand numbers. So it might be very natural for them to take part of the lead, at least in terms of the money issues that there are to do in the church. So understanding how elders are gifted, both in the overall qualities that they're required to have, the gifting they have,
as part of being an elder in the church, but also just because of the experience they've got. Understanding those dynamics is really important in terms of how eldership functions. And then finally, I've put a sort of a catch-all at the end. This PE is personality of elders. How people are actually wired. We're all different, aren't we? And we all think different ways. And there are lots of different ways we could cut that. Some people are optimists, some people are pessimists. And some people are able to multitask, some people can only do one thing at a time. And a lot of that is just the way that we're made. We are wired differently. You don't need to be in any kind of ministry or in any kind of church for very long to see that people work differently. People are wired differently. And understanding part of that is really important to getting a leadership dynamic working. The Five Voices thing we're going to look at a bit later is just one tool to help work through that. But actually, we've got to be thinking about how we relate to one another as individuals, not just as those who are called to a certain office. And I think that's a really important part of getting the leadership structure and function right. By the way, I think one of the ways that you work that last bit out is simply by spending time together. I think a leadership team that only ever meets together to do business will probably learn about their various personalities the hard way. In other words, over disagreements and things that don't quite work out. I think one of the ways that you work through that is you hang out together. We have an elders meeting once a month where we pray, just said that, where we pray for, through the membership list, the attendance list of the church. And we spend the first part of that meeting, we have dessert together. We don't have a meal together. You can't quite fit it all in around jobs. But we have dessert together, and then we spend time just praying for one another in that meeting. And actually, that's almost half our meeting. So it's interesting that we spend almost half our meeting looking out for one another, praying for one another, hearing about what's going on in one another's lives. And one of the interesting things about that is over time, you begin to learn how people tick. What is it that stresses them out? What is it that they can do without getting stressed? What are their particular family situations that they're wrestling with, or sins that they're battling, whatever it may be? So actually, I mean, you might say, in a way, that last bit there is about trust and friendship, both of which are very biblical ideas. But actually, good leadership's work, when there is trust, and I think also when there is an element of friendship as well, there's an element of biblical friendship is not just about having the same likes. Biblical friendship is being on the same journey together. And actually, I think you see that amongst leaders very clearly. Now, what happens here, I think, is that if any of these change, leadership has to change. So, for example, let's just imagine a little sermon. In fact, what I'll do is I'll get you working on a little example. So here's your little example. Did you get all those down, by the way? Size of the church, quality of the church, number of elders, gifting of elders, personality of elders. They're not the only categories, but I observe these are the chief ones that make a difference. So here's my little example. It's St. Drogo's church. St. Drogo is the patron saint of ugly people. I think more churches should be named after him. Apparently he had this incurable disease that he couldn't go near everybody, but he still managed to heal people. So anyway, St. Drogo's church has four leaders. One of whom, Matt, we'll see where this is going, is paid part-time by the church. There's not a full-time elder, there's a part-time elder. The other three, Marco, Luca and Johnny, they're all lay elders, but they're different kinds of lay elders. Marco and Luca have full-time jobs, young families, they're busy guys. Johnny's retired, so he's got a bit more time in hand. And the church appoints a new associate minister, Paul. He's going to work alongside Matt, but he's also going to serve as one of the leaders. So in some ways, it's quite a significant change. In other words, you're just saying we have four elders, we've now got five. Doesn't look very significant in terms of change. But actually, it's going to change a huge heap of stuff, right? It's going to change, certainly going to change the last three of those. So here's something to work through. What are the implications of this change for the leadership team dynamic? Just try and imagine what some of those might be. How can the current leaders make Paul an active part of the team so he doesn't just feel like he's the new boy or the junior? And what protections need to be put in place to preserve the plurality of the team? So now the team is different. How are you going to protect the team and make sure that you're still a plural group four, that's okay, we can just about, you know, four of us on a Zoom call, four nice big pictures. Five, some of the pictures get smaller, right? So how are you going to preserve the plurality of the team now that Paul has come and joined? Okay? So put yourself in St. Drogo's, there it is. Matt, Marco, Luca and Johnny are the four elders, and Paul's come to join them. So that's how I think through that. So in your groups, or just with perhaps the person next to you, it's up to you, don't mind. And then after a few minutes, we'll come back together and see what you've come up with. Okay?
When you say associate minister, is that like part-time?
What would you like? Would you like him to be... Paul, he's always off going on travels, this guy. Paul, he has other ministries. So I think if Matt is part-time, it's unlikely they'll appoint an associate who is also... who is not also part-time. So let's assume he's also part-time.
What happens when Paul goes to prison?
Well, there's a question. Yeah. You'll just get out again. Yeah, you have a prayer meeting, you'll get out. Right.
Well, that's Peter, isn't it? Peter in the next parish.
Peter in the next parish, indeed. I do know you're watching this, that's fine. You can look at this page. You can. Just give me 1 minute. I'm just trying to paste the picture.
Thank you.
Okay, do you want to finish those conversations up? We'll have some feedback together. Okay, you ready? Start over there with the Rise Old Birds, whatever they're called. People should be given team names, you'd be like a pub quiz. So I'll give you your team name. So the Rise Old Birds over there. What have you come up with? Which of those three do you want to pick up on, and what have you been talking about?
I think in terms of the dynamics we were talking, I think most of our focus was on the fact of recognising that it does change the dynamics, because whereas you've got Matt working with other elders previously, and you call them an associate, then it does change the dynamics. And the danger is then that you've got Matt and Paul coming to elders meeting saying, we've decided this, which is the recipe for, even if they're very gracious, it may be even if they're not.
Thanks, Paul. So you basically created a staff team, and actually one of the things we're not going to talk about, but it's really important to think through in leadership functions, because if you have a staff team that's made up of people who are paid by the church, how do they relate to the eldership? And lots of churches haven't really thought that through. Effectively, the staff team become the leadership of the church by accident, even if that's not what you wanted it to be, because they spend all their time together, or spend a lot of their time together, they're talking about stuff all the time. So you've got to work really hard on that dynamic. Thanks, that's really helpful. Thank you. All stars at the back, what have you come up with?
I'm going to cut a second, because one of our questions we were going to ask Ed was in his module, where does the staff team fit in?
Because, okay, yeah.
And particularly, some of your staff team are also on the leadership team, and some are. And Ministry of Mission keeps going day by day and takes a pace, and the staff team are the ones on the ground where, you know, in my setting, I've got the Ministry of Leadership team.
Yeah.
But I'm seeing my staff team two or three times a week, and I'm seeing my Ministry of Leadership team once a month. So how do you... You've just said you're not going to answer that.
Well, we can have a go. For what it's worth, I think part of the answer is being really clear about what people's roles are. And it sometimes looks a little bit like over-engineering to give someone a job description and say, this is your role, and these are the boundaries, this is what you're responsible for, this is what you're not responsible for. But actually that's a protection, in some part at least, against the voluntary unpaid elders in the church.
In which case, we were sort of saying... That's part of our answer to this.
To be really clear.
Particularly protecting Mark and Luke from being because they're busy too, like, less available.
That's right, yeah. And actually, one of the solutions to that might be to say Johnny, who's retired, could spend a bit more time with these two guys together, so they're not just staff team and elders. But actually, it becomes in a subgroup of the elders. There's a bit more breadth to it. So there are ways around it, yeah. That's why I made Johnny retired, because actually retired elders can meet with a guy during the day and make some of that balance. Okay, I can't remember what you were, but team in the back, lead leaders, what did you come up with?
I mean, we were talking about these guys, you know, here, the danger of the dynamic between the new staff my question was, if another guy came in who was a layover, I thought like that's the harder guy. If you've got a new layover coming in, isn't they don't have the kind of relational power, and they don't have the real regular conversation as a staff team position power quite the same way. How do you help them assist somebody coming into the ownership, into that process?
Well, let's ask that. So, Timothy, what answers have you come up with? Or did you just ask the question?
I just asked the question.
Okay. Well, try answering a question, John.
I think what you said about regular social stuff is really good. And I think that means it's underplay. It's not going to fit the ceiling, which is actually the question you spent on.
But actually, even asking that question is a really important step. But most leaderships don't ask that question. Most leaderships say, oh great, Timothy's with us. We can spread the burden around a bit more. A bit less for each of us to do. And there's a sense of relief as a new elder. And don't really ask the difficult questions about how is that going to change the dynamics? How can we help? So I think even asking that question, even asking Timothy, how can we make that work for you, it's really important in those circumstances. Okay, promotion hopefuls at the back. What have you come up with over there?
I think on the point, like in terms of depth, like the job description thing's really helpful. But I think having, having clearly defined roles, but having a universal working culture that's agreed and demonstrated is super helpful. So like having principles.
So give us an example.
So like, you know, you might say if. If something's communicated by email, this is the time frame we expect people to reply, for example. I mean, that's quite basic, but so that people don't feel alienated by practice, they might come in and say, I expect to respond on WhatsApp or whatever.
Yeah.
In this time frame, I expect to, these are my expectations, they don't match. But if the existing team can't articulate the working culture, then it's quite hard for people to feel part of.
I think that's really helpful. It's worth saying that the larger that one is, the size of the church, and the larger that one is, the number of elders, the more important process becomes, which feels really, especially if you've been in a smaller church with a smaller eldership where everything feels very organic. You just pick up the phone and chat to another guy and that's it. It feels really... It feels almost retrograde to say we've got to have processes. You know, we've got to distribute agendas and minutes and those kinds of things. But actually, the reality is when you're operating in a slightly larger church, so at the top of this kind of, at this level in terms of size, you've got to have those things to protect them. And in order to try and make things work, it doesn't need to be over-processed. It doesn't need to be over, policied. But actually, you do just process up a little bit in order to protect that. And defining or thinking clearly about what your culture is, that's a really important part of it. Okay, yeah, really good. Okay, this team at the front. I've run out of time.
We came up with similar things to the wise birds, and we were thinking about the...
The wise old birds.
The wise old birds, sorry. Johnny and Matt and new guy, Paul. Going to get together on a regular basis, they're going to inevitably discuss church things, and that then could disenfranchise Marco and Luca. So they need to work hard on that. Now, I feel like I'm these people who work hard and then try and put in the church activities. But the thing is, if you're wanting to get the team to work well together in terms of doing socials, it's going to be hard for Marco and Luca to appreciate and understand that actually a social is actually a useful thing.
Indeed, yeah.
I'll be thinking, well, let's just get on and do X, Y, Z. Because they've already got so much time. So I think it needs to be communicated clearly, the need to meet together.
Yeah, so why you're doing something, I think is really helpful, yeah. And actually these guys need, you know, as we'll see in just a moment, the leaders need to pastor one another. You know, we are members of churches before we're leaders in churches. And so when we are to keep watch, and we'll come on to this, there it is in Acts 20:28. Keep watch over yourselves and all the flock of which the Holy Spirit made you overseers. And it's remarkable how much leadership is conducted here, all the flock, and how little leadership essentially is conducted here,
keep watch over yourselves. But actually, that part of the protection, I think, is beginning to be what you described, so that's really helpful. Last little group in the middle there.
Regarding the responsibilities that were already existing in the team, we saw sort of two extremes. On the one end, especially Marco and Luca can just say, well, here's everything, finally some time. Or everybody in the current role is like, well, this is really my baby and I want to keep this. And Paul gets no clear responsibilities and things left out. So yeah, it's those two extremes where you have to find a way of balancing and redistributing the different things that were looked after.
Really helpful. Ray Evans, who works part-time for FIC, has written a book called Ready, Steady, Go, you might have seen it, which is about this kind of stuff, about how you structure a church. Ready, Steady, Go, there it is, published by IVP. Ready, Steady, Grow, it's called. It was almost too clever a pun. Thank you, Ready, Steady, Grow. So he has a thing, and it's a rule of thumb in their church. I think it's quite helpful. He said their elders, as well as their regular meetings, they try and have a Saturday together once a term and then a weekend together once a year. And that might be too difficult. But actually this idea where you don't just vary the kinds of meetings you have, but you vary the time you have. And it means that you can talk about bigger issues, you have a bit more time to give to those, or you can look out for one another. So on a weekend together, they go out for a walk, they talk about life, they have more time to do that, they don't feel so pressured. In our church, we don't quite get to a weekend away just because of the nature of ministry life, but we do have a day once a term together, and we save our big questions, our big ticket items for that day together. So our regular business meetings in church, we try and do maintenance stuff, keep them going. And then if we've got big things to think about, so we're talking about discipleship, how are we going to do discipleship in the church? We save that. Rather than trying to do that in a 2-hour meeting on a Monday night, we save that for a day meeting that we have once a term. I hope that's just sowed a few seeds in your mind. Let's just press on, because I want to try and explore this little idea of progress. So we've been thinking a lot about how we as leaders watch over the flock. How do we exercise our leadership? It's pretty clear, I think, that part of that exercise is a self-leadership of ourselves. We are looking out for one another. And actually that we're making progress. So I know I'm jumping around here, but I'm still in Ephesus, because this is 1 Timothy. Right? And 1 Timothy is written to Timothy, who's in Ephesus. So I feel that it's legitimate. I'm still in Ephesus. Let's have a look at this passage. It's 1 Timothy 4, 11-16. Command and teach these things. And that means, by the way, the things that are about to come. I don't know if you can see down there. See that? These matters, these things, same expression. I think it's just a little set of bookends. So command and teach these things. Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity. Until I come, devote yourself to the public reading of Scripture, to preaching and teaching. Do not neglect your gift, which was given you through prophecy when the body of elders laid their hands on you. Be diligent in these matters. Give yourself wholly to them so that everyone may see your progress. Watch your life and doctrine closely. Persevere in them, because if you do, you will save both yourself and your hearers. Just we haven't got a long time on this, but just in very broad terms, what Paul is saying to Timothy, who, by the way, hasn't quite got round, the part of the letter is that he appoints elders. So this is a personal letter at this stage, but I think the lessons are applicable to leaderships more generally. What Paul is interested in Timothy's life, is that he gives himself to both godliness and to gifting. Right? Can you see that? So this section here, really, is about godliness. That's about how you live. And godliness is not just about being a holy man, a holy leader himself. It's actually setting an example to others. That's part of leadership. So there's a strong emphasis on godliness, and then there is also an emphasis on gifting, which I think is what this second section is about. So you get godliness in that first section, you get gifting in that second section. And then look at what he says. Be diligent in these matters. So that bit down there, I've just highlighted. And as I said, if these matters connect to that, what Paul means is be diligent in godliness and gifting. Give yourself wholly to them, plural, so that everyone may see your progress. The strong implication, it's not a strong implication, it's not an implication at all. The strong command here is that Timothy is to make progress in both godliness and in gift. And I think that last verse just backs it up. What's your life? I think that relates to godliness. And doctrine or teaching, I think that probably relates to how he exercises his gifting. Watch your life and doctrine closely. Persevere in them, plural again, because if you do, here's the shock, you will save both yourself and your hearers. He can't mean actual salvation, because that's the gift of God to Timothy, but he means the working out of salvation to become effective. It's through the leader's godliness and gifting, and not just the leader's godliness and gifting, but the leader's progress in godliness and gifting that is going to make a difference. So quick buzz, this is only really a couple of minutes and then we've got a little case study. What will happen if there is a lack of progress in gifting in leaders? First question. What will happen when there's a lack of progress in godliness? So I'll tell you what, if you are at these three tables at the back, two at the back and this one, do the first one. What will happen when there's a lack of progress in gifting in your leadership? So gifting is just static or even declining. And then tables for the other three. What about the second one? What will happen when there's a lack of progress and godliness? So we're not talking about ungodliness or ungifting. We're just talking about lack of progress, right? What's going to happen in your church if your leadership doesn't grow, doesn't make progress? Have a think about that. Just for a couple of minutes. Okay, let's have a think. These three tables, who's got some wisdom? Lack of progress in gifting. What's going to happen is a lack of progress in gifting in leaders.
We were saying through the questions that culture sort of offs, and which we want to equip our people for change over time. Some ministry that may have been very effective 10 years ago is no longer really answering the right sorts of questions.
Yeah.
We've got to keep progressing to understand it. But what is it that people need to know to serve Christ
with? Yeah. Bang on, isn't it? So actually, you talk to someone who was a pastor 40 years ago, things that they were wrestling with 40 years ago are some of them the same, some of them are different, some of them are very different. And actually, how easy it is to feel out of your depth, just in pastoral issues, in preaching, in teaching, in connection to teaching to real life. Yeah, absolutely. Any one more?
We discussed that if part of the gifting of the leadership, and particularly you talked about the idea of preaching and teaching, is that you're helping people go from the spiritual milk to the meat. And if you actually don't continue to progress with the church, help them progress with the church, you really stagnate, and then you're not able to the culture needs or apply. How does God's word today affect you?
Yeah, bang on, I think that's exactly right. Exactly right. What about godliness? That feels a bit more abstract. You know, if you're a great preacher, he's a great preacher, always connecting stuff to life, but you know, he's got a terrible temper. Is that good? Does that really matter? Should he be making progress? What about that one? Progressing godliness, what have you got? What did you come up with?
That's a really important message to the congregation, and also it accepts this sort of, this is godliness, I'm not making progress in these other areas, and the congregation might think, well, I'm struggling
right
with it. Yeah.
So, for better or worse, the congregation are looking to the leaders for an example, and Paul's pretty clear about that, isn't it? So, we want people to follow Christ, but actually, how do they know what it means to be Christ-like? And in some way, shape or form, they're going to be looking to senior saints in the church, but they are going to be looking to us as well. So I think that's exactly right, yeah. So we become hypocrites, don't we? Yeah. Anything else to add on that?
I guess from a human point of view, gifting is progressing. So I'm becoming a better communicator and a better leader from a human perspective. But godliness isn't progressing. I'm going to start believing my own hype and relying more upon myself and the way I've read some management books and got some new techniques. And it becomes less about my relationship with the Lord and more about my relationship with business
right.
leaders.
And pride comes before
of course.
Yeah, exactly right. It's interesting, I don't know if we can really make this point forcibly. If you look at some of the very, I suppose, infamous leadership scandals that have been in the UK and also further afield in the US, many of them are not actually a failure of gifting, they're a failure of godliness. And a failure to make progress in godliness. And I think, essentially, if you don't make progress, you end up going backwards, don't you? But when you look into them, and you see the way people have spoken to others, or you see the way that they've reacted or treated others, this kind of idea of bullying, it's very often about a lack of exercise of godliness. And not just, oh, they don't know how to exegete a passage or whatever else it may be. Let's try and work it through in a bit more detail. Another little case study to take us just up to a short break. So back in St. Drogo's Church, and they've read 1 Timothy 4, and they're very convicted by it, and they've read an excellent little book, and they want to put it into practice. So here's the question: what help, structures, processes or resources, I don't mind where you want to go really, might you suggest to enable leaders, not just to make progress, to help one another make progress? This is how we look after one another. How can you suggest to them that they might make progress together in both godliness and gifting? So I think there's probably two ways of approaching this. You could think about that they're not full-time workers, they've been promoted, they're part-time workers. You could think about Matt and Paul, they've got a bit more time, you know, to go to a conference or whatever to read. What about the lay leaders? Perhaps they're a bit more time poor. So we have a go with that. St. Drogo's, take yourself back to St. Drogo's. Just 5 minutes on that and then we'll collect some answers. Okay, everyone know what they're doing? Off you go.
Or that road and then it's very easy to the
I'll give you another minute and then we'll have some wisdom.
Really interesting. Things like today, it's really good for us to know that we're actually going to go to something, conference, whatever it is, because it shows that only we really benefit from it, but they do as well. And I think following that, rather than saying, oh, there's this conference on, you want to go, actually it's, why don't you come with us? Or that's what we think, just to show, and then that is an opportunity to hopefully meet with other people, be encouraged, because it's, yeah, today's really helpful. Right.
Okay. Let's see how you've got on. First of all, we want to say big up to Zendrocos that the leaders are actually thinking about this. They're not just spending all their time thinking, you know, how do we fix the roof, or you know, we need to dig a baptistry because we've suddenly embraced baptism, or whatever it is. They're not thinking that. They're actually giving some time to think about how do we grow together as leaders? How do we encourage one another to grow? So big up to them for that. Because I wonder how many elders' agendas or leadership team agendas you went around the country and looked at the agenda. How many of them you would see that on the agenda? Probably not any. So good on them for thinking about this, and not just thinking about it as individuals, but thinking about it together. How do we grow together? How do we encourage one another? How do we spur one another on? So I've got a name for you now, World Cup winners. So World Cup winners here, as you've got a slightly international flavour. What do you come up with?
Accountability to one another within the team.
Go on.
Being open about things that you're struggling with. And if people aren't open about what they're struggling with, it's the others pointing out for them.
Yeah,
And having a culture where
so being honest about that.
Yeah.
I think actually that this passage is quite helpful. Set an example for the believers in. You've got five very helpful categories there. Speech, conduct, love, faith, purity. Speech is, I think, how you speak, but how you communicate more generally. You know, what you text, your WhatsApp messages and emails. Yeah. Conduct is the general New Testament word for holiness, just general holy living. Love is, I think, not love towards God, but love towards others. How much do you love others? Faith, I think, in the context of 1 Timothy and into 1 Timothy 5, is not faith in God, it's faithfulness. So trustworthiness, it's a really important leadership quality. So how reliable are you? Purity is in 1 Timothy 5:1-2, that's a sexual word, it's about sexual holiness. So there's five good categories there, actually, to look at together and say, you know, where are some of those areas where, you know, let's be honest, where we're struggling, where we want to make progress. How can we encourage one another? Thanks, really helpful. What about this table here, European champions? What have you come up with?
We thought that taking specific time is good, like the example you gave of days away and watching out for each other personally, but being very specific about when you're looking at progression and gifting rather than godliness, because it's probably easier to drift into, say, critiquing each other's sermons.
Yes. There's a place for that, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And that would be
you might discover how godly someone is when you do that.
But it's much harder to challenge someone's character.
Yeah, that's right. Which is where trust and friendship come in. Because actually, you do need to have a good level of trust to be able to say to someone, I think the way that you sent that email was unhelpful. And this is why. What can we do about making our email communication better, for example? That would be a good way of taking that forward. Yeah. Thank you, really good. One or two more, just at the back.
In terms of gifting, I think it's important
trades, practical, this kind of stuff. And that may also then give time for the lay leaders to step in where others can work.
Yeah, so you invest in one, there might be an opportunity for another. Yeah, really helpful. So the giving of time is important.
Spence made the excellent point that I hadn't really thought about, that although openness, accountability is good, just recognising that for those in full-time paid ministry, they have more at stake, homes, livelihoods, and just acknowledgement that it is harder for them, perhaps, to be fully open about difficult things because they've got more to lose.
Really helpful. Do you have any answers about that?
No.
I think acknowledging it as an issue is the first step, actually. If Marco or Luca, or to some extent Johnny, are struggling with something, the others will help and all the rest of it. If Matt and Paul admit to struggling with something, they've just got a lot more skin in the game.
Yeah.
And not least the reality that leadership changes. If Matt comes up with something and shares a struggle that he has, how does he know that in 5 years' time Luca's not going to, with nothing to lose, actually, is not going to step out from the eldership and use it as a rod to beat him? Actually, so trust does need to be developed, but there's also needs to be an acknowledgement. There's only so far you're going to go, yes.
That's a really helpful point, because within different churches, the elderships of different churches will react differently. Mm-hmm. And in one church, you have very elders who are totally supportive, but you can have a situation where some of us might know of, where a pastor has admitted to a certain issue, and even just admitting to it, before he knows what's happening, he's out. And I think that
that's a bigger issue than I think. Thank you. And one of the ways around that, I think, is certainly within independence, we don't believe in isolation just because we're independents. So actually, I think if I'm Marco, Luca or Johnny, I want to encourage Matt and Paul to have really good friendships outside of the church as well. So I'm not one of these people that says you can't have friendships in the church, that you can, but actually I think there's a really strong place for saying, you know, Matt, you were assistant to John the Bee all those years ago, and if you go back and spend some time with him, if he's still alive, that's a really healthy thing to do. That's not compromising our independence as a church. That's investing in you to grow. And actually, you can perhaps be a bit more honest with him than perhaps you can with us. I think that's a really helpful invitation. Thank you very much. Let's just pause there. We're going to take 15 minutes just to refresh, stretch our legs, just to clear our heads. There's a lot of input, I realise that. And sometimes you just need to reset. So a cookie and coffee will help you reset. And then we're coming back. Maybe about 12:05, we'll come back and we'll do our last session as we begin to think about how we relate to one another as leaders. Okay, is that all right? Great. Oh, just one more thing to say, sorry. I've got to move it there. This book here, Progress, basically all this stuff on Progress, I've written up into a little tiny workbook, which bargain of bargains. If you go on the 10 of those websites and you put in the code PROGRESS99, you can get the ebook for 99p. What, sorry? He's put it in all caps, so I guess it does matter. So Progress 99, all caps, 99p. I mean, come on. Can't go wrong, can you?
Cheaper than loo roll.
Indeed, cheaper than loo roll. Yeah, I'm not sure. But you're right. Well, I don't know why where you buy your loo rolls, and I think I want a bit more than I suggest.